happy talk, keep talking happy talk. Talk about things you'd like to do.
From South Pacific. Is it the happiness talking there or the medication, the Prozac?
I started giving it to difficult patients, patients who hadn't done well somewhere else. And people thought, I could get help with something I've lived with for years.
That's psychiatrist Peter Kramer, the author of Listening to Prozac, thinking back to the moment in 1989 when psychiatry changed and the drug Prozac changed Americans' expectations about living with depression. It's where our friends from Retro Report take us now, to the idea of well-being in pill form that launched a revolution for millions of Americans and transformed the drug industry from top to bottom. Joining us is Sarah Gross, freelance journalist and producer working with Retro Report. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you.
So Prozac changed psychiatry for sure. It wasn't just talk therapy anymore. There was actually a prescription that could be written. How transformative was that?
It was transformative in many ways. It both enabled people now to talk about their depression, come out of the closet about their depression, because all of a sudden there was this little pill that could fix it. And the pill no longer had these draconian side effects. And the pill was aimed at their serotonin level, so they could come out of the closet and say, hey, it's not me, it's some chemical that's missing in my body, and I can now take this pill and be fine.
And this became almost immediately a cultural issue here, and you had people taking on Prozac as almost a pop culture phenomenon.
It really changed everything. There was one morning when I woke up, and I felt like the idea of being alive didn't seem so awful. It was an amazing turnaround.
From thinking of being alive as being awful to being a best-selling author of Prozac Nation, that's Elizabeth Wurtzel, who really sort of carried this call of the pop cultural significance of Prozac.
She was instrumental in making Prozac a household name, not only because she was a well-educated, middle-class young woman enrolled at Harvard when she came out about her depression, but she also wrote a memoir about it. She had wanted to call her memoir, I believe, Waiting to Die, and the publishers of the book, realizing that they were on the cusp of something quite incredible, changed the name to Prozac Nation, and it did. It took off. People wanted now to take Prozac to cure their depression.
It was a drug that pretty much marketed itself. Listen.
Prozac is saying that happiness itself is available for purchase and can be one of these things that defines what it means to be an American and have that American dream.
I mean, it's really overwhelming in the sense that the drug doesn't require a whole lot of explanation, and the drug companies sort of understood that immediately.
What they also understood that it was a blockbuster in the waiting. They started advertised in mainstream journals, particularly to women, and later on television for the first time directly to consumer via television. The ad became part of everybody's living room.
Here's one of those ads talking about something that was really not talked about until Prozac existed.
Think it's PMS.
Did you take my keys?
Maybe it's PMDD.
All treatable with psychoactive drugs. Do you think the proliferation of all kinds of ads, allergy ads, every sort of ad that's on television from the pharmaceutical industry really begins with this Prozac transformation?
I'm not sure I would say all ads for specific illnesses. What I would say is that Prozac found a way to, after it came off patent, Eli Lilly relaunched it as this drug, Seraphim, for a new ailment called PMDD, which women didn't necessarily know that they suffered from. After that, other advertisers, other drug companies realized that they could now advertise things to people as enhancers rather than curatives, and it spawned a whole lot of ads for things like Latisse, which helps you to grow more eyelashes if you are suffering from inadequate eyelash growth.
And you could invent a disease and make a drug go with it. I mean, perhaps inventing a disease is too harsh, but that's essentially what's going on here.
As David Hertzberg says in the Retro Report piece, it was more about addressing things that were happening in your body and pathologizing them. For example, people suffer from heartburn when they eat too many cheeseburgers. Instead of telling people to cut back on the number of cheeseburgers they eat, Prilosec was now launched. Instead of thinking of erectile dysfunction as something that happens with age, Viagra was introduced.
And eventually the drug companies will come up with, you know, age, that unsightly malady that we all hate, can be cured with a single pill.
I live in hope.
Sarah Gross, freelance journalist working with Retro Report on the transformation that took place in 1989 with the development of Prozac. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.